Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. I'm not sure what just bloomed in the air, but my allergies have been so out of control. I so badly want to live the life where I can keep my doors open with this perfect spring weather, and I'm able to roll around in the grass outside with my littles and live a life without the gross congestion. But when my allergies are at their worst, I start having to compromise on life. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieves your allergy symptoms and decongests your nose so you can breathe better. This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I love that Claritin has an option for non-drowsy relief of allergy symptoms. With Claritin D, you can still make the most of your day without compromise. This means that I can have my windows down car dance sessions with my boys and help with yard work without the symptoms of my allergies popping up out of nowhere. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. Michael Miller, welcome to Real Talk with Rachel Autry. I'm very excited for this conversation, and you should know upper room worship is like a go-to in this house. Always.
That's playing. Encouraging. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I know, I'm so excited. Also, I told you this, and I think it should be funny to tell other people. We rarely have men on the show, so congratulations for making the cut.
I made the list.
Like, you should feel really special. Sometimes men, awesome. You know, they pop in our email inbox and opportunities come up, or we even have guys, and I'm like, this would be really cool to get them on the show. And then we have to think through the girls that are going to be listening, and I'm like, is this the guy for this job? But you have a really cool message, and you have a really incredible book that you have recently written, which we're going to hop into. But would you just introduce yourself to my friends that are listening that maybe don't know you or upper room and all the cool things?
Yes. I am Michael Miller, and I am the senior pastor. I founded Upper Room, which is in Dallas, Texas, with my bride, Larissa. And we have four kids, two girls, two boys, all under the age of 12. So our quiver is full. And we pastor a lot of millennials, a lot of young adults. We're in the urban downtown area of Dallas, and just really excited about what Jesus has done and is doing with this generation and women. Like, passionate about empowering women. We need their voice in the church. And so
That's thing.
I'm passionate about that. So honored to be here and to be on this podcast.
Okay, Rachel. Here's one thing that I recognize about Upper Room that I think is really cool. And in case people don't know, just want to throw context in here. You guys, to me, mm-hmm. are marked by prayer and marked by passion. Mm-hmm. Like, those are two things that I mm-hmm. see coming out of Upper Room. And I told you this, but I'm going to be in Dallas at the end of September for our friend Ruth. She just was on the show for her book launch. And I'm like, I will get myself to prayer at Upper Room. I will Uber there. We are making it happen because I want to be a part of what's happening. I just also want to clarify, I think there's a lot of girls listening today that this episode, no pressure, okay? But this episode is going to maybe release some, I don't know, but the word that keeps coming to my mind is sterile. Like, all they have ever known about their church experience or spiritual life or who the Lord is to them is just sterile. Like the judge sitting up the stairs on his throne.
Right.
Which is only one very small character of who he is. There is a lot of other facets in how he makes himself present to us.
I can relate to that. I grew up thinking God's attribute that I related to the most was his finger, and it was always pointed at me. and just that, what I did, what I didn't do, and there was no passion, there was no heart connect. I felt like I was around him, heard a lot about him, but I didn't discover his beauty and his passion for me. His passion for us has unlocked, I think, my passion for him. So his zeal is something else. So I hope this podcast encourages those that maybe feel that way to be stirred by his zeal for them, that they're the apple of his eye and he is nearer than we realize. So that's cool. Passion and prayer. I haven't heard that description of Uproom, but it's very good.
I'm like, my gift to you. I also love that you talked about how you have a huge heart for millennials and specifically like my age demographic generation. There's a lot that we have faced and are overcoming that's kind of new-ish, whether it's anything from screens and social media to dating culture and apps being completely different. I mean, you know more than me, but I just feel like there's so much newness and complexity that's been added to a faith journey that maybe hasn't yet been tackled.
Right.
What have you been seeing in my age group? Like, what kind of encouragement do you feel like people are most hungry for?
Would you classify as a millennial?
You know, it depends what Google says.
I know.
I am a millennial, according to Google.
Okay.
But I'm on the cusp.
Okay.
I'm almost, what is it, Gen X? Gen Z?
Gen Z. Yeah, Gen Z is the generation, right?
I'm almost 29.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right on the cusp. My wife is a millennial. I'm not. I'm a Gen Z. No one.
Gen X.
I'm a Gen X. No one talks.
My husband's a millennial. Yes. He's like, I want to be older than you. I am. You're Gen Z. I'm millennial. I'm like, whatever.
Well, I think what I'm stirred about is your generation is looking for a cause. I think you're very justice oriented. And it excites me. Some of the issues, I think, culturally that have been brought to the surface needed to be brought to the surface. And I have seen when that passion for justice is channeled in the right direction, the power of that. But there's so many competing narratives, I think, for that passion. There's the cultural narrative. And what I have seen is when the biblical narrative is presented clearly, that call and that cause, man, they're signing up in the droves. I think they're done with religion. They see through a lot of the superficiality of church, kind of the plastic church in a box. And I think that's been somewhat, not obliterated, but broken open by Uproom and the expression of it. It's a daily, almost daily prayer meetings and this rhythm of life that we call them into has been very attractive. And I think it's, I think it's very, very gospel centered as well. So, I'm excited about millennials. I think they are, and even more so Gen Z, I think it is, one of the most unique generations on the earth right now. And some of the best leaders, emerging leaders in Gen Z, I cannot wait to see what God does with this
generation. Let's talk about this because you said something that I think hit the nail on the head for a lot of people listening, which was this idea of it being plastic, it being something you tap in, tap out, call it what you want, wear it on your resume, claim it. But the rhythm and living life daily with God, I think sometimes can be the coolest thing, right? And people are like, oh yeah, I want that. I want that. But practically they're like, I don't know, like trying to find a church home, trying to figure out where to show up on a Sunday. Also feel alone Monday through Saturday, and that loneliness can cause them and behavior and disciplines to look different than what they really want and value. So let's say someone listening is stuck in that space. First moves that you've seen people make that you're like, oh, this is the best place to be or the best next step.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the Lord has a place for them. And I think if they will ask him, you know, I think sometimes we choose things that we like, but I would I would ask this audience where you called, because I think young people have seeds, and those seeds have needs, and the need is soil. And we need to find out where we're to bury our life. It needs to be in some type of spiritual soil that is community on a local level. It's not going to be perfect. But, you know, in order for a seed to grow, it has to die. And so there is that death process that community calls us into. And I think sometimes we hit the eject button when that process starts to ensue. But man, the Holy Spirit does his best work with dead things. And so if we can figure out, okay, Lord, you're calling me into this community, if we can see it as soil, that's what I tell my young people all the time. This is great soil for you to die in so that you can experience life. But spiritually, for the believer in Jesus, life comes through death. And so we don't like that. We don't like dying. We don't like losing our life in order to find it. But oftentimes the local community, the local church that is imperfect, it's God's plan. And so I would encourage them to find a local church and realize it's not perfect, but why did God call them there? What does it look like to bury their life? What does it look like to serve? I think those are some basic things that get you on track, but I think that process is not easy. It's easy to hear, but it's so hard to experience.
Yeah, and the thing that comes to my mind is this really big idea that's so cool and trendy right now, which is individuality, like figuring out who are you and like what do you have to offer and all these things. And it kind of can bleed into the church too, right? Where it's like, where are you? And yes, there is a uniqueness, and we have been fearfully and wonderfully made and different than any other person on the planet. But there is this denying yourself, laying down your life, understanding it's not about me. I am not main character. And like, Lord, who would you have me be? And that is such a hard thing with the agendas of individuality that I feel like is hard pressed on millennials and Gen Zs right now. And can be really weird.
Yeah, we can feel so connected, I think, with the social media platforms, with our screens, and we get these peeks into people's lives, but we don't actually have a connection to them. Like one time my wife, we shared an Instagram account for a while, which was really, really funny. It was golfers, because I'm a golfer. And then all
I was about to say, your Explore page was pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, it was. Like the way they would target us, it was really unique. But one day I looked, and like most of the people we were following, Larissa had unfollowed them. And I was like, what happened here? Like you left my golfers, but everyone you were following isn't here. And she said, I couldn't. My soul was being troubled because I had a peek into these people's lives and I had no real connection to them. So I decided I was only going to follow people that I actually knew, and with a couple of influencers here and there that you know, fed her. But what it was doing to her soul, from comparison to just some of the wonkiness we can get into by having these peaks into people's lives that we don't actually know. And so having community that knows us, having community that we know, I think helps remove some of that is just so prevalent right now, I think, in the online space.
Something that's come to my mind a lot recently, but especially just now, is this idea of community is more than just having somebody to go and do something with, or a person to go take to the concert or whatever. Like it is, it has potential to be super rich and to feed the places where you're like, well, I feel lonely. Cause I think what I have found is that I can have company, but not community. I can have someone to hang out with, but that person doesn't know me. Like know me. And I still feel lonely.
Right.
Like, but I have someone I could call. I got speed dial girls, but I don't have the person that's like, you're better than that. Or let's talk about this. Mm. Or I need to have a conversation with you. And it wasn't until I had those people that was really uncomfortable that I felt. Mm.
What was the bridge? What was the bridge from company to community for you?
So personally, my husband's in the military. We've bopped around a lot. listeners might know this if they're old, they've been through that whole journey with us. And moving around a lot has, you've had to remake friendships. And then you're like, well, how invested do we get? Because we're leaving again in a few months. And I was okay with just being surface level and having a girlfriend I could go to dinner with, but didn't know how deep to get. And I felt that need when just life circumstances started happening. We had a miscarriage when we had just moved to a new military base. I didn't have anyone to call. It was super weird and lonely. And I eventually got to a place where I was like, I don't care what it takes. I don't care if I look like a fool. I need someone to know I'm really broken right now. Didn't have a church home, just in a super very void is what it kind of felt like, a black hole. But I knew it existed because I had had it before. And I think I took advantage of what I had built before because I didn't realize it takes discipline to keep it up. So I do feel like I am a healthy spot now where I have people that can call me out because I was in a place where I realized this isn't right. And I think it takes girls and guys that are listening to get to this place where you're like, I am so daggum lonely. Like, no one knows I'm struggling with this. Mm-hmm. No one knows this is what I do at dark. No one knows X, Y, Z, and I need someone to know.
Right. I would add too, one of the components that helped me in my 20s especially was finding older moms and dads, that it's multi-generational and you have to be intentional in that. You have to go and seek out those types of relationships. But for me, in my marriage in my early days, there was a couple, they were the backbone. Like when Larissa and I got into, you know, our corners, we said, we're calling
your people,
our spiritual mom and dad, more or less. But we were very intentional in positioning ourselves. And then as a single guy, I didn't get married until I was in my early 30s. I found security in that. I found security in older men having a peek into my life and being able to speak into it. So again, I think that points back to the church community aspect, that you can get the multi-generational dynamic. And I think those older couples, older relationships, they're really willing to do it. They don't always know how to make themselves available. And so us, hey, can we grab coffee? Being intentional with some people that are older, I think is really helpful. But that was a key for me in finding freedom and some soul issues.
That's so good. I think 20s. Too, because they can give you the perspective of, will this or will this not matter in 5 to 10 years? Like, is this something we need to handle, or is this just a preference and it's really cute and you'll get over it in a second? That's so good. That's wisdom. I think this goes back to the dying to yourself, because what I'm hearing, what I want people to hear, is that this doesn't come natural. Like, this isn't something that someone listens and they're like, oh, I'm not good at that. I'm like, I don't think really anyone's good at this. And if you are, what a gift. But I think it takes you saying, oh, I'm going to have that awkward conversation. I'm going to go introduce myself to this woman. I've watched her mom, or I've watched her struggle, and I just admire how she does it. And I want to introduce myself. I want to be a part of that. It does not come natural. So permission for people to feel awkward and cringy and it be clunky at the beginning, because I think those are the most beautiful ones, is when you're like, I don't know how this is going to work. Because I think you have a little bit more yielding to what God has for you, rather than you just being like, oh, we get along, this is great. You know?
Right. And realizing you have something to give them. I know that some of our relationships, because I'm in my 40s now, but some relationships where people have positioned themselves that way in my life today, they give my family so much. Like, to be around my kids have all these, we have a ton of worship leaders and they're all in our world. And my kids now look at some of these young adults that, you know, we see them as kids, but they're really young adults, and they are my heroes to my kids. So my 9-year-old's writing songs night. And the reason she's writing songs is because Elissa Smith and some of these worship leaders are in our house, they're in our world, and it has inspired them. And so to see how they rub off on our family and have become a part of our family, it takes a village. And so I think the church, again, is that village where we get to figure out, okay, what role am I to play? So I just want to encourage young girls especially find a mom that might just be a little older that has kids and throw in with them, figure out how to get into their orbit around their world and land and see what God does.
Somebody else that has been super life-giving to me is a widow who has never had kids. And that has given me so much perspective on marriage and motherhood, even though we are non-compatible on paper. Perspective is really neat to gain from people who have lived longer, maybe even lived differently. Yes. Yeah. So good. Okay. You mentioned something earlier too that I want to bring up again. You said, and I think this pinged somebody, so that's why I'm bringing it back up. You said something about how it's not going to be perfect. And I think there's girls listening that have been like, I've tried the church thing. Like, I have searched up and down my local community. I have been hurt, hung up, all the things. And I don't know. I'm okay listening to or watching the live stream from the place out in California. Like, I'm okay, whatever. And it's just a bit, their church is compromised. Their little C church is compromised. Right. What would you have to say to them if they just feel stuck and they're like, gosh, I want that. It just doesn't exist for me. Are they disqualified? Mm. You know, are they the exception to the rule?
No, they're not. I don't know what specific context the Lord will call them into, but I think if this is a desire in their heart, God will lead them to the right place. And we need connection. We need that to go from, how did you put it? From a company to community. I think that is such a phrase. But to find that community, ask the Lord to pull you into a place that it may take some time to find. It may take some time. It may take you getting over your preferences, getting over what you might choose to be the perfect place, but finding that place where you can serve, where you can give, something happens. And we need that. Brennan Manning's a author that has really touched my life. He has this phrase. He says, the loner is a liar, that we end up on an island living sometimes in deception, not aware of it. And we need each other. We need each other to call us higher. We need eyes in our lives. It's just the way the body of Christ works. We were made to do this together and in community. And so I just know it's in his heart, and where they have been hurt, I think forgiving the church, forgiving leaders, forgiving communities is a huge step, because if you carry that lens of offense towards the church, you'll bring it into your next place. And so sometimes we're living with a jaded view of church because we haven't actually forgiven our former community, former experiences. And it's just a gnarly place to be.
It can bleed.
Forgiveness is so central for the leader.
It can bleed into everything. Like it eventually, like that resentment is a bit more contagious than we like to think it is. And
I, as a pastor, one of the things I ask people that come to Upper Room, because they think, you know, Upper Room's the coolest thing. Like, it's so unique. It's not what this church is. You know, this church is missing it, or that church is missing it. And I always ask them in their introduction to Upper Room, as they're placing membership, tell me about your last community, because how you left your last community will directly impact how you're entering into mine. And if you're offended at your previous leader, you will become offended towards me every time it happens. So getting them to a place of forgiving, getting them to a place of maybe they need to go back and shore things up. Maybe they need to have a conversation, but entering into a community is directly impacted as how you left your last one. So I think just identifying that. And again, forgiveness is the oxygen for the believer. We are called to forgive, especially those that have hurt us.
Good. Yeah. So our pastor asked us the same thing when we were pursuing membership at the church we're at now. He's like, so why did you choose to leave your previous church, or why are you pursuing membership here? And we had the conversation that we were previously at a different church, and he was like, was their church hurt? Like, what had happened? And we just told him, like, it just honestly didn't fit the needs of our family anymore. We have had two kids. Our lifestyle is different with travel, blah, blah, blah. And he said, okay, good. Well, I ask because if you were offended at your last church, you will be offended here. And he said the same thing. He said, you know, if there was something that rubbed you the wrong way there, something here will rub you the wrong way too. And I just want to make sure you're not leaving from any tension, because it's sinners leading sinners. Like, we're just doing our best. There's going to probably be something said right. or something done. And of course, like, there's very dramatic and necessary situations to consider leaving a church. But if it's for low-key offenses or, like you said, preferences, right. I'd challenge you. Like, just maybe press in. Stay a little longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's an important topic. And again, I think the longevity you can develop with a community, having a history, not just with God, but a history with God's people, so crucial. So find a community, guys. It's really important.
Yes, so good. One last little note on community, and then I have something else I want to ask you. Community has also taught me so much about my Creator. Because if I only know me and the people that are similar to me, and I don't see the other generations, the other skin colors, the other, like, people that aren't parents or have chosen a different route with career, then it's hard for me to see the fullness of the character of God. If I'm only around people that are similar to me, mm-hmm. and I've just learned, like, if, I mean, let's go with the body analogy. Mm-hmm. If I'm the arm and I never get to know a leg, I don't really ever get to understand or mm-hmm. be grateful for what the legs do for this body, because I don't know them, and I'm not aware of it. And so that's another reason too, if somebody needed like one more push to go for it, as far as community goes,
right.
it's needed.
Right.
It's, and I think right. once people tap into community, there's this whole new richness to life that's now unlocked, and they're like, ooh, I can't go back. And they start to notice when they start slipping into loneliness
yeah.
again. So this is good.
Yeah, I think that has helped me in the racial conversation that was really, you know, at the center of culturally in like 2020, 2021. And Eniola is a worship leader in our world. She's an African-American female she's in her early 30s, but then she was in her late 20s. And the conversations that her and I got to have around the table and how that moment in time impacted her directly. You know, I'm a middle-aged white guy, and I had so much to learn. And I think listening, I think asking questions, I think diving into people's lives. So many of us fall into echo chambers of these cultural topics, and we're fighting for this cause, but it's void of relationship with people that are actually impacted by it. And so as a pastor, I really had to do some repenting for things that I was unaware of, things I wasn't even thinking about when it came to some of these subjects. And so it does extend your worldview. It helps you understand people that are drastically different than you. And this goes across the board. There's so many subjects from not only race, but sexuality and, you know, gender is a big topic right now. And so those types of conversations are best had around a table, not necessarily on a Twitter feed or your Facebook page or Instagram or TikTok. I think we can get information there, but we've got to bring it to a table where we're connecting it to the people that we're walking with. So that's something I'm really passionate about in today's culture, because it's divide and conquer. It's our culture so divided, and we've got to build longer tables so that more people can come and we can really dine and fellowship and understand these topics that affect real people. But I think the church is the place where that happens, where we can come to the table of the Lord and really walk through them thoroughly. Because sin, when we deal with sin, without Jesus, we just end up in sin. We end up in error. We don't have the ability to respond to some of this without his leadership. And so the table of the Lord helps us connect to one another and to connect to him. So I'm extremely passionate about that when it comes to diversity and learning how these topics impact the people
so
that
good.
They're impacting.
Same wavelength, because that was kind of where I was excited to go next, which was feel like people came to this conversation wanting two things. One being like, I need a push, some practicals for finding my people, finding community. I feel lonely. And two, this idea of also having communion and company and friendship with Christ and being like, I know he's more than what we talked about before, the plastic, the Sunday in the sanctuary. Like, I know, I've seen, I've heard, I've witnessed. I just want it for me too. Can you maybe share what that looked like for you as a person, as a believer, to be able to finally almost feel like, oh, I am in rhythm. I am in step and walking with God.
Yeah, I think it's connected to a number of ways you could answer this. We've hit the community one, but I think purpose is important, that God wired us and designed us uniquely. Everyone listening, you are uniquely made in his image, and the embodiment of that, there's an expression. It works itself out into our lives. And that could be, you know, for me, I was a business major, but it was evident out of college that I had a calling to be a pastor. I was called to the church. I was called to lead his church. And so as I started to discover him, I started to discover his purposes for me in the early days. And I started making decisions, life-altering decisions, in order to fulfill that purpose. And so I think asking God for his designed purposes for us, that connects us to his heart. It connects us to his leadership. Again, developing a history with God. And you start to live for something bigger than you, because it's not about you. This narrative that we're born into as believers, where this thing is going, it is so, so glorious. And as we tether our giftings, our passions to his purposes, all of a sudden life starts to line up, from a spouse, from friendships, from community. Like, I think all of those flow as we start to understand how he's wired us. Like, I see young adults all the time. This is another thing. If you can't find community in the city that you're in, maybe he's calling you to move. I see people all the time move from different parts of the nation or the nations to the upper room because of how it's impacted them. And as they step in, all of a sudden there's a grace that meets them for friendships, for community, for purpose. And so I think discovering that wiring and how God has designed you and how that's expressed is so crucial in connecting to him. That's an answer. There's probably a number of answers, but I would say purpose.
That's so really good. And I also think purpose can be intimidating too, because people are like, oh, there's one purpose. And I'm like, well, yeah. But I think, like you said, it's tied to how you were created. What are your tendencies? What are your inclinations? Mm-hmm. Are you creative? Are you mathematical? Like, all of these things that our brains, our bodies are so uniquely different than one another. And there's something I have to offer that, Michael, you could never, and vice versa. And so finding the magic sauce that God was so kind to give us is fun.
It's interesting. There's a scripture. It's a famous Amy Grant song, which I may have.
I love her. There, love it.
You love her. All right. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Which song she's saying? But Psalms 119, 103. And I think God sometimes will give us, I call them horizon words. So it's like, hey, you're going to be a missionary. You're going to be a mom. You're going to be whatever that destination is down the road. He highlights it. But then there's feet words. There's practical steps that we take today to get us there. And I think of David, like David as a teenager. He had this history with God where he one day would kill a giant. He would bring, you know, a national revival of sorts politically by slaying this giant. But because he was faithful in the sheep field, because he was faithful tending those sheep in the back 40, overlooked by his dad, overlooked by his brothers, but his faithfulness in the obscure, in the unknown, it actually positioned him for that purpose. And so I think there's probably a lot of people that are in that season of obscurity, feeling unknown, but that they know that they are known by him and they're faithful with what's before them. It actually positions them to get to that horizon. But I think sometimes we want to, you know, move in a straight line to that. And God's leadership isn't always A to B. It's his leadership is a river. And if you've ever seen a river, it twists, turns, it goes forwards and backwards. And he's really into the journey as much as he is the destination. So just to give people courage to be obedient in the little things, to serve in ways that maybe no one sees or knows. And it's not under that, oh my God, this is my full calling and destiny, but it yes. will get you there, I think. And I think we underestimate the power of that daily practical steps.
So good. Yeah. So chapter 6, I'm going to plug it for you, but you wrote about this, King David and his leadership and what we have to learn from him. And that was really fascinating for me. And then one more thing for people listening that are like, I want to know about my purpose. I'm like, have you asked God to give you vision? Like, have you sat still long enough to not put your own ideas into your head, but to really be like, okay, Lord, I'm here. I'm just going to turn off the music. I'm going to sit in a quiet room until I get something. And I think sometimes maybe all we'll get is peace or an overwhelming sense of zeal for life or whatever it is. And again, knowing that, yeah. So, okay. So a friend has been praying over a season for us in our life, for our marriage and just what's next for us. And she's gave us a good word that I feel like is for this moment. She said, sometimes we wait for our confirmation from man. And so it gives us a lot of insecurity about just like waiting on what's next and having someone tell us about an opportunity or a job opening or an apartment that's opened up. But if we've gotten confirmation from God first, it gives us the confidence to be like, no, that's mine. Like, this is for me. I can move forward and look so silly, but no, God gave me the confirmation. I know this is for me. I can do this. And so I think, especially my generation, we wait for somebody else to tell us it's the right thing. We search for everyone to be like, good job, gold star, and forget that it's not about man and the confidence that can come from that. So I feel like if people are lacking confidence and drive or maybe vision to sit still and to get some confirmation.
Yeah, he's a good shepherd. And his leadership, I think, is sufficient. And for us to entrust those precious, precious things, they're precious, your calling, your purpose, to entrust those to him, he is more committed to you fulfilling that than you are, because he designed you for it. And so ultimately it's about him, it's about his glory. But just entrusting those to him, I think, daily, so crucial. You know, part of my world was seeing a group of young adults that now they're in their early 30s, but and a lot of people know them. They have platforms. They're writing songs and winning awards, and it's really wild. But this friend group that showed up in my world, I knew none of them were worship leaders. They didn't come to my community to lead worship. They came to my community because God was there and they felt called to it. And my favorite story is Joel Figueroa, who is like one of my best friends. He's a little brother, but the first time I met him, he was cleaning the upper room bathrooms. I was going to the restroom. It was during the week. And I was like, hey, who are you? And I knew we needed custodial help. And he goes, I just wanted to serve. And I said, Joel, I'm Michael, man. Thank you for doing that. And I knew him as the guy that would clean our bathrooms. Well, now he's in Europe right now at David's tent leading worship in front of thousands. He was just in Paris leading worship. He was in Ireland leading worship. Like what he's doing now, I'm jealous of. I'm like, dude, you are incredible. it's wild to see the trajectory that he's on, but it started out cleaning toilets, like literally. I've seen God put his grace upon that type of heart. And it really is profound. His ways are not our ways. And we say that, but it's not always easy trusting his ways. And so I just want to encourage those younger girls, especially, he sees your desires and he's going to fulfill them as you delight in him. I love that Psalms, delight in the Lord, he'll give you the desires of your heart. So there is finding this delight in the one who we're entrusting these desires
to. That's good. That's so good. That's freedom. I'm so excited about this conversation, this book. It's so good. Hey, will you, plug yourself? Where can people find more about you, Upper Room, the book, all the things, if they are just like, wow, I'm on fire. I need more. I need more. Where can they find it?
It's the story of our community, mm-hmm. His House, His Presence, really unconventional church plant that we did in 2010. It was in the homosexual district of downtown Dallas. It was like a church planting graveyard. I wouldn't have chosen, speaking of God's leadership, I wouldn't have chosen that neighborhood to plant a church. But we went on a journey together to discover how the Lord was building this house. And so that book is our story, building a house for the presence of God. And we can talk about that, which is a passion of mine. But it just came out yesterday. We celebrated yesterday. It's my first book. So it's taken 5 years to get out. It was awesome process, but we did it. And so I hope it encourages. My heart for this book is to encourage young leaders, this demographic that we're talking about, and really building lives around the presence of Jesus. I think the presence of God is one of the best kept secrets in the church, that he who is everywhere desires to manifest himself somewhere. And so where two or more gathered, he's present, and just learning how to engage the presence of God. I hope this gives people practical tools.
Yes, and we are all about practical tools. So this is an incredible resource for people that are like, again, wanting to invite God into their everyday lives, their steps, their rhythm and routines. This is for you. It is so good. And what one of us listening doesn't want to be a leader? Podcast girlies, they push play because they want to make the most out of their time. They're not listening to playlists. They're listening to podcasts. And so they are the leaders, the girls that are wanting to learn, lean in. And this book is for y'all. His house, his presence. It's so good. Well, I'm so grateful. Yeah. We're going to link all of this in the show notes. So people can get there to Upper Room if they're in the Dallas area or want to travel, grab your book, wherever they are, all the things. Y'all join me, listen to Upper Room Worship on Spotify. That is like where it's at in the Autry household. But yeah, so grateful.
And another cool, I think, way they can plug into us is we stream daily prayer. So if they're looking for just, you know, a window into a world where Jesus is being ministered to, a resting place, I've seen a lot of people touched by our YouTube. I was just watching our Portuguese set. We have a Portuguese set from 10 to 11 on Thursdays. I don't understand any Portuguese, but I do know the presence of God. And to listen to these guys sing songs to Jesus in Portuguese, it just did something. I just came out of that. I'm kind of
it unlocked a whole new thing.
Really cool. Yeah, Jesus said his house will be a house of prayer for all nations. And so we've really taken his word at that and hopefully are inviting a generation to prayer and maybe redefining, discovering the power of prayer. For me, it was boring and this discipline that I did not like doing, but there's a culture that now is this house of prayer. And so we hope to encourage young adults, college campuses, in communities to start hosting the presence of God. So that's a passion of ours.
Well, yeah, I'm going to get there. Like I said, making my promise to myself. Like I want to get there. Again, thank you so much for your time and just wisdom. I know people are walking away with the practicals and just things that they could start right now after listening. And that's what we're all about. So grateful again, just for you and coming and sharing about what God's put on your heart.
Yeah. Thank you, Rachel. It was an honor. God bless y'all.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode with us. It would mean the most if you took 30 seconds and left us a 5-star review in whatever platform that you're listening in right now. It's one of the best and free ways that you can love on us. So don't forget that anything we mention in today's episode, from resources, products, and more, can all be found in our show notes at realtalkwithrachel.com. For more updates, behind the scenes, and fun chats, head over to Instagram and follow us at Real Talk Podcast.